Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey, this is Kristen, and you are listening to yet another episode of Buffering the Vampire Slayer, brought to you by Cheetos, Blood, and Hugo Boss. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we're watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one at a time. I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I'm Kristen Russo, and this week we are talking about Season 1, Episode 7, Angel.
Angel.
Oh, what a title.
It says it all.
The first episode that is named after a character on the show.
Accurate.
I read that in the trivia section of IMDb.
Nice. Stay tuned at the end of this episode and every episode for the all-new, all-original recap song we'll be writing about this very dramatic episode.
Yes. Oh, what an episode.
This episode was written by David Greenwalt. David Greenwalt! Excited.
You love David Greenwalt?
Yeah! A classic. And directed by Scott Brazil. And it originally aired on April 14th, 1997.
I wonder what I was doing on April 14th, 1997. So I was a junior in high school.
Okay.
And in April, that's like prom season, isn't it?
Sure. As someone who's never gone to a prom, right. I really can't help
you. Well, I'm trying to figure it out because I went to my junior prom with a girl. So I don't know. That's a milestone. I have a picture of that. For those of you listening, I'll post the picture of me and the girl I went to prom with. I've posted it on the internet before, but I'll post it on Buffering so that you can get a load of what I was doing just around the time that this episode aired.
Get a load of it, she says. Great.
Anyway, this episode, for those of you who are like, gee, I wonder what the episode named Angel is about. Well, this is the episode where we learn that Angel is a fucking vampire. I asked Jenny what the summary should be, and that's what she said it should be.
I mean, I can't really. Yeah. Can you sum it up better than that?
I took it literally. Okay. So we watched this episode twice because that is what we're going to try to do for all of the episodes moving forward. It just is better for us. We get our head around things better. Mm-hmm. And this time we watched once on Netflix and once on the DVD.
And the difference is very apparent.
It's astounding. If you are watching, are we going to get like sued for?
No.
It's just like if you're watching on Netflix, you need to stop immediately.
If
you have another option. Hulu apparently is showing what we see on, or at least closer to what we see on the DVD series.
Mm-hmm.
But the lighting, the sound, everything is so drastically different. But one thing that was on Netflix that was not on your DVD, Jenny.
Was previously on.
And so I feel like you know you're going to get a good episode when you get a previously on. I mean, I guess you just get them forever now. But this episode, they were like, well, we have to let them know everything that's happened with Angel to this point. Which is like 6 seconds worth of scenes.
Yeah.
To set us up for Angel.
What a great episode. I'm so excited to talk about it. So many great things happening. Everybody's just like really slamming it out of the park. Performance-wise. I can use sports analogies now because I was in Chicago when the Cubs won the game that sent them to the World Series. So I am now A Cubs fan?
Sports expert, Jenny Owen.
Yeah, sports expert. Athletics correspondent, Jennifer Youngs.
So we get, we get a couple of things before we roll into the credits here. One of my favorite moments pre-credits in this episode is the beautiful cross-hatched lighting angel reveal.
Ooh, right? Angel under the stairwell.
It's like Angel is standing near blinds so many times in this episode.
Yes, he's always lit cross-hatchedly, for sure.
Yeah.
And he looks great.
He looks super great. Jenny paused it very dramatically,
just so
unintentionally, so we could eat our sweet potatoes for dinner.
Yes.
And we got the beautiful lighting on Angel's face. But we also find out about the three in this.
Right, right. Before we're in the bronze, we are down in the master's lair, and he's all like, I'm going to do this stuff. And then he's like talking through his plan with Darla. And it's like everything... Every line that Darla delivers in this whole episode, that Julie Benz delivers in this whole episode, there's just this, like, really, like, interesting, I don't know, it's almost like a sexual energy. You know, there's just, like, this, like, enthusiasm that's, like, one step beyond anybody's enthusiasm. And maybe that's the bloodlust talking.
I mean, she does eventually get into a schoolgirl outfit, so I don't think
eventually, pretty soon.
Yeah.
But her, like, her bare enthusiasm is so fun.
Yeah, she loves killing.
She loves killing. She loves when other people are going to kill. She loves when, like, heavy hitters are getting involved.
Absolutely.
Some more sports talk.
She really loved getting assigned the role of killing. I'm jumping ahead now, but, like, her assignment of, here, Darla, you kill the three.
Yeah, yeah, that was a delight for her.
Just so excited. But, okay, this is a screen cap. I have to look it up. Oh, here. Is this it? Yeah. So the three is a biblical reference, right? So I don't know how to pronounce this, but it says, what did you say? Jaboram?
I don't know.
That's how Jenny pronounces it. But it's from the book of Samuel. Also, this says, also known as David's mighty warriors. The three is the name of a group of the greatest warriors of their time. So I thought that was pretty cool. I've been reading more and more about Joss Whedon because it's happening. I'm sliding down the slippery slope that is hosting a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast. But one of the things that I read recently was just about his respect of his audience, that he does not ever, like, dumb things down for his audience, that he, you know, not expects you to know, but, like, adds in a lot of references to things, assuming that you will know. And of course you can enjoy the series if you don't get all the references, but there are so many, like, little nuggets every episode of really awesome stuff. Anyhow, then Xander dances.
Still before the bronze, after they discuss the three, we see the three for the first time just for a very quick moment.
Yeah.
And we see three really beefy, scary, muscular, tattooed dudes. And then immediately we see walking up the sidewalk three other scarier, bigger, more vampirous.
Vampirous.
Yes. One of them's missing an eye. It's a whole thing. And the guys who I think we're meant to understand are, like, sort of neo-Nazis or something.
Yeah, they're definitely
bikers,
like, skinhead
intense
kind of a vibe.
They scatter like cockroaches.
Oh, wow, Jenny.
Which leads us.
Did you just accidentally do that beautiful transition?
I sure did. And that takes us to the bronze, where they're having a pre-fumigation party, which is an annual event where you can catch a cockroach because there are just cockroaches free range all over your business. Like, that's fine.
But what is going on? And why is everybody so chill about the cockroaches?
It's such a tradition. Every year.
There's, like, a person that picks one up and is, like, laughing with it. Like,
ha, ha, ha.
Person who lived in New York City for 15 years, let me tell you what, I would still not pick a cockroach up by its leg. Nobody picks a cockroach.
Yeah, that is the whimsical delight of someone who's only lived in Southern California, where cockroaches are just, like, once in a while,
like, locusts
proposition.
They're like once every seven
years.
Yeah.
But it's not the kind of thing you live in fear of, in constant fear of in Southern California.
I just was amazed at how chill they all were about the cockroaches.
Yeah, no.
Willow smashes one with her foot, holds her shoe up to Xander's face, and says, "You want to get a drink?" Like, yeah. What?
No.
Free drinks. Absolutely for a cockroach. Not. Can I tell you a story about cockroaches and drinks?
Please.
Sorry. It's just, so when I moved to New York, I had only been living there for like a couple of months, which is noted by the fact that I was going to get dinner at Jekyll and Hyde's.
Nope.
Sorry. If you don't know, Jekyll and Hyde's is like a very like touristy, you know, haunted restaurant where you can go get food. And I went to Jekyll and Hyde's and I ordered, also note the year 2000 when I was drinking Diet Coke. I ordered a Diet Coke and I drank my Diet Coke. And upon drinking my Diet Coke, when the brown liquid disappeared, revealing a clear glass that I could see through, there was a cockroach.
No.
In my drink. And I was only 19, so it didn't occur to me that it was bizarre that the restaurant was like, oh, so sorry about that. We'll take that off your bill.
Ugh.
They took just the Diet Coke.
We'll take that $1.50 off your bill, ma'am.
Yes, they just took the Diet Coke off my bill. And I was like, thank you. Like, what?
No.
What?
Nope. No.
Anyway.
Absolutely not.
Anyhow.
Okay, so now we can talk about Xander's dancing.
Now we can talk about Xander's dancing. I keep talking about wanting to make gifts and not doing it, mostly because I don't know how. I mean, I do, but it takes me a very long time. But if anyone out there could please make a gif of Xander's dance at the Bronze.
Ooh.
Oh, it's so fantastic.
He's really good.
He's cutting a rug for sure.
Yeah, like,
That's where the phrase came from, I think, is from this.
With like shears. And then
yes,
we
Jenny,
see
what?
Cordelia. We see Cordelia for the first time in what feels like forever.
Yes, a whole episode went by without our beloved Cordelia.
And she pops up just to slide a little dagger in between Xander's ribs.
Xander's ribs, yep. And,
and then he says...
Yeah, I know.
And then
I was going to skip it because... because there's so much with Xander, right? We've been talking about Xander so much in these first few episodes, and
right.
He says an uncool thing. He says an uncool thing. But you don't have to skip it. I was just personally like, I didn't write a note down because I was like, you know what, Xander, I'm gonna give you a pass on this episode. I'm just gonna let you.
Yeah, he's pretty. I feel like he's pretty mild in this episode.
He is pretty mild. He you know, we've gotten some feedback from you all about Xander, and some of you have been like, well, he's a teenage boy and he has a crush and he doesn't like understand what to do. I mean,
right.
So on some counts of that reasoning, I say no. I will continue to be upset about some of the things Xander has done, but on some counts, I do say. Touche. Like, we can give Xander a little bit of space here.
Right.
In some moments.
It's a spectrum.
Yes.
He's not, exemplifying things that we really hate 100% of the time. Right?
What a compliment,
Jenny. Well, the thing is, like, I feel like some people who've reached out to us maybe have taken it personally. And, like, I can certainly sympathize with embarrassing behavior or behavior that I wouldn't be, you know, the most proud of,
right,
under the influence of like a staggering crush.
Right.
Like, I think we can all understand that. But what I think you and I are trying to discuss is the fact that just because, say, in 1997, the standard for the way that behavior was portrayed in mass media was troubling,
mm-hmm.
Just because it was everywhere doesn't mean that it's not troubling. And just because somebody's lashing out because they are hurting and they don't know how to deal with it doesn't mean we can't say there's a lot of a particular type
mm-hmm.
of language that's going on here that doesn't feel good, doesn't feel right in the context of looking back from 2016,
right.
From this year, right? Did I miss anything? Oh, thank you.
I'm snapping for Jenny. So well delivered.
Gosh, thanks.
I did want to point out, too, that all of the feedback that we've gotten in a positive light has been from men. All the people who have said, but Xander, not one female has written us to say, stop ragging on Xander.
Right.
Sorry, well, I just wanted to say that. Because I think it's funny and because I wanted a perfect moment in which to say the patriarchy.
The patriarchy.
But we really do hear what you're saying, and I
absolutely
think, I think it's really fascinating. I mean, we'll see what's possible and who we can pull together and if this even happens. But we've talked a little bit about like getting a few people in on this
and for a Xander Feelings Atrium.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's a very special
like,
episode
about
of Vampire Slayer.
Let's talk about it. You know?
Yeah. Because I want to stress again, like that we're not. Obviously, there are men in this show who are doing a great job.
Like Giles?
And Angel?
Yeah, Angel.
Even the Master hasn't been a misogynist. And he's a vampire. He doesn't even have a soul.
You know, it's true. He has a lot of respect for Darla.
Seriously.
A ton.
Okay, anyway, okay.
We've really gone off here, but I think for good cause. There's a lot of chatter about this stuff. So
and we appreciate the people who have written to us to outline their positions and bring things to our light that maybe we weren't aware of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thanks for writing.
Yeah, keep writing.
You can always write us an email at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com.
So we get to the right before the credits, right? We see Angel in the lighting, in the angel lighting. I'll call it angel lighting from now on. Always standing by a mini blind.
Right. And Buffy leaves and then runs into the three. They get her by the arms. And then we cut to the credits.
Right.
We come back from the credits. And somebody shows up.
Angel. Angel shows up and they're fighting.
Good dogs don't bite. And he's got like his fighting underbite going on. And it's really great.
It's a really great fight scene. There are actually like a couple of amazing fight moves in this episode.
You like that double kick?
Oh my God. Buffy's like scissor kick. She like throws both of her legs up in a split, kicking both of the people on either side of her, both like two members of the three.
Pretty impressive.
Pretty amazing. And then she says, run. Which I think is pretty,
indicative of something.
Yeah, I mean, has she run from? Has she run yet from anyone? Like, it's very un-Buffy.
Well, I think you've got to take into consideration too. She thinks that she's fighting three very strong vampires with a guy, like a guy, just a human dude.
Right. She doesn't understand that she has like equal strength.
Right. So she's, I think, protecting him as much as self-preserving.
Right. So they run, right? And they run directly into Buffy's house. And this is a big moment.
A big moment.
Yeah, go ahead, Jenny. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's a couple things.
She looked at me like, you stop it right now. I've got something to say.
No! I'm just so excited because there are a couple things that I want to talk about. Because obviously you've now watched the episode, so you know Angel's a vampire. Plus you heard us say it a minute ago. But it's very convenient that Buffy happens to just be saying, come on, get inside, right?
Yes.
Just as they're running in. And then I want to point out to you that one of the three's hand comes inside the house. And that is non-continuous with things, with the way that house entry and vampires is treated later in the series. I'm interested to see if there's like a development, if we see another hand going in a door like this again or not, because it's like a force field later episodes.
And from what I've read too about this episode, they really singled this out as a misstep.
Gotcha.
Like as an accidental, this should not happen. And I think what I read is that like this doesn't ever happen again. They can't get body parts in a house where they haven't been invited.
Right.
So this is just a mistake.
What a weird way to say it.
What a
strategy.
But we learn, I mean, this episode is huge because we're like putting together a lot of also the like vampire mythology that exists in the land of Buffy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we get this first bit, they cannot come in unless invited. Right. And then, I mean, we get, I don't know, should we talk a little bit about some of those bits or should we wait till we get to them chronologically?
Let's go chronologically
if that's cool. Okay. Great. Because next chronologically, Angel is naked.
Oh my God.
Shirtless,
oh my God.
But
right before she tells him to take his shirt off, I just want to mention this. Just after they get that hand out of the door.
Yeah.
You see this like beautiful thing, this beautiful shot of the three through the beveled glass, which is like really nice. And then later that's like mirrored. You see, I think, Joyce through the beveled glass in that whole like Darla and Joyce exchange later on. And that I just thought that was like such a nice detail that they like brought back again later. I wanted to point it out.
Yeah, I did notice it with the three, mm-hmm. the way that they're like doubled in the cut of the glass.
I did not want to distract you from Angel's shirt being off.
Oh, Angel's shirt is off. My note, my literal note in all caps is Naked Angel Hubba Hubba.
Oh my God.
What was yours?
Well, first I wrote Shirtless Angel Nice Tattoo in all caps. Uh-huh. And then Joyce shows up.
Right,
and my
right.
follow-up comment was, Joyce is into it. God, what a babe.
Oh, Angel is just so dreamy.
Like, Joyce wants to be mad that there's, like, some older boy in the house, but she clearly is, like, Buffy.
Yeah,
nice.
There's a moment when she's like, about to go up the stairs. She's done her mom bit of, like, I'm going to bed, Buffy, right? And she looks at Buffy, and she, like, purses her lips in this particularly amazing way. I love Joyce. Joyce is just...
yeah, she's so great.
God, she's great. But, yeah, so she's, like... She's like, okay, glad Buffy is dating this super hot hunk, but you're a teenager and he has to leave now.
Right, right.
And then, now, here's the deal. Buffy, like, opens the door and says to no one, like, stay later, we'll study, bye. And then and then closes the door, and then four sets of feet go up the stairs into her room. They close the door.
And then they continue to have a conversation.
Full volume.
That's not how it works in your parents' house.
Right? I mean, that was my question is, like, in my house, first of all, in my house, like, my mother would have stood on the steps until the person left the house.
Yeah.
And if I had ever tried to get anyone into my room, I mean, it was not possible.
Not feasible.
I wasn't even able, I know this is not true for you, but I was not able to sneak out of my home.
Oh, hey, me sneak out? Never.
I know from your stories that you have snuck out of your house.
I don't know what.
Jenny,
yeah,
admit
I
it.
Snuck out. I snuck out a bunch. I was a bad kid. I was a good kid living a bad life.
But I couldn't have done that I was on the second floor too, which made it a little more difficult because I would have to like get downstairs but there was just no way. I was not sneaking out. You were sneaking out, but neither of us was having Angel talk at full volume in our rooms without anyone noticing.
No.
Like, what is Joyce doing? I imagine Joyce like with her headphones in a bubble bath, so maybe
totally.
It's,
and candles.
Yeah.
For sure.
Also, just like to say one more time, this scene, the scenes in Buffy's bedroom, Netflix versus DVD, so dramatically different with the lighting.
Yeah, a lot of the nighttime stuff.
Yeah.
Really noticeable. Oh, God.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so Buffy sleeps in an underwire bra?
Oh, I would sleep in my bra.
Yeah,
if
I would
had
if Angel was there, totally.
Right?
But also, like, so uncomfortable to think about going back to that life.
But, like, yeah, I would have been right there.
Yeah.
I mean, what is she going to do? Take her bra off? Angel's there and she wants to, like, you, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I get it, Buffy. I'm with you. Plus, Angel has just said how pretty she looks,
right.
Even when she's going to bed.
Mm hmm. Mm
hmm. Anyway, so I think one of the next moments here is we pan the night has ended, or you know we fade out on the scene of them falling asleep. We do find out that Angel has not, no one has been around to hear if Angel snores or not
in a long time.
Because remember, calling back to I think it was the second episode, Angel doesn't have any friends. Poor, sad, dark Angel. But then we go to the high school and did I miss something?
Sorry, I just wanted to say two things before we leave Buffy's bedroom. First of all, she's sleeping on that doily pillow.
Your favorite pillow.
It is so extreme.
You
it
love
is
it.
The lumpiest pillowcase I've ever seen in my life. Go back and check it out. And second, the musical theme that plays as they're like going to sleep.
Oh.
It's like... you should go back and listen to it. It's very beautiful, haunting. It kind of sounds like an 80s horror movie sort of like gentle moment song theme.
I don't even recall it. I have to go back and watch.
It's just this sort of like arpeggiated kind of minory thing. And it sounds like spooky, but I also, when it came back a second time later in the episode, I was like, oh, is this the love theme? Because they have like themes for the different like couplings that happen.
Right.
I really should have checked it out before we started talking about it, but I think it's worth even just going back to take a listen because it's very beautiful. I just wanted to point. I'm really just all about the small moments of beauty in this episode.
Yeah, you're like the beveled glass, the love song playing softly. Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
Okay, so after Jenny's favorite love song, then let me get to my favorite sign in high school, which is library closed for filing. Like, what?
Oh, my God.
You guys.
Oh, my God.
They've closed the library for filing. Also,
just thank God they finally fucking did something to keep people out of the library while Buffy is, like, beating the crap out of Giles.
Right. I mean, personally, I would have loved if they had just kept with the theme of no one ever goes into the library. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do really appreciate this sign. And we find out...
They've been listening to the podcast.
We find out what's... Last week or 2 weeks ago when we were doing episode 6, we were like... What's the deal with this library cage?
Yeah, what's locked up in there?
Well,
Among
other things, some serious weaponry.
Yeah, some quarterstaves.
Quarterstaves and...
And crossbow. And
crossbows.
Pads.
We train. Buffy knocks. Poor Giles.
Poor Giles.
Like, couldn't they have, like, a person whose job it is to be, like, a little younger and more fit...
Giles is fit.
I mean, he is remarkably, but I just like every time Giles gets hit, even when it's by Buffy, like in a training session, I'm like, oh God, his body.
Giles.
Like, he's a librarian. He's from the UK. He's fragile. He drinks out of a green mug someday.
Oof.
I can't wait till we get to the green mug.
That's going to be
the only spoiler that we've ever had on this podcast.
Oh my God, is Giles green mug?
Let you know that there's a green mug. But yeah, that's all I had for this bit, because the next big thing that I have is back with Angel again.
Right, back up in Buffy's room. Oh my God, what did you do today? I did some reading and I thought about a lot of things. And then she immediately assumes that he was reading her diary.
She loses her mind.
Hunk can mean a lot of things is my favorite.
And she says,
and yes, some of them bad.
Some of them bad. Like, some of them very bad. And then she, the thing that I loved was when she's like, and I know what I said, your eyes were penetrating, but what I meant to say was they were
bulgy.
Like, Buffy, you're not.
And A doesn't even stand for Angel. It stands for Ahmed, a charming foreign exchange student. Okay. Girl.
It's a good moment. It's a good moment. And I mean, Angel and Buffy have a million moments, I feel like, where, like, obviously she knows she's not convincing him otherwise.
Yeah.
She's a very smart human. She knows she's not, and he knows she's not. And they're like, it's like they're both in on this, kind of like flirting by way of pretending they don't like each other. Which has really been their vibe up until now, Angel is like, I'm not interested. Like, you know, I'm removed. I disappear all the time. I don't care.
Yeah.
And Buffy is like, no, I don't like him. What are you talking about? I would never like
him.
Except for, oh, my God, I like him so much.
And then they kiss.
And then they kiss.
Great work.
Yeah. All in all, great job.
Yeah, this is really an episode that fueled a lot of intense dreams for a lot of junior high and high school students around this time,
everybody
I'm sure.
Everybody wants to be, well, not everybody, but a lot of us want to be kissed like that.
Yeah, it was good.
It's a kiss.
Great job.
It's kind of like the, on the level of, well, maybe not on this level, but the Ross and Rachel kiss, you know, that kiss?
I gotta trust you on this one.
So are you kidding me? Really?
I mean, I'm sure I've seen it. I just
can't
remember.
It's just like one of, like, you've waited for it. The thing with the Ross and Rachel kiss is you've waited for those of you who might not know what I'm
spoilers
talking
about. For Friends
spoilers
season
for Friends.
Three.
I don't even know, but you've waited so long for that kiss, and it's a really incredible television kiss. It's
in
the doorway, and they come back. That whatever. But this gets me. This is one of those kisses.
Yeah.
Like, if I had to rank television kisses, this is high.
Imagine that was your. You had to.
Kristen, you're
go,
not
go,
allowed.
Go.
To, yeah, you're not allowed to leave until you rank television kisses. So Angel's a vampire. Holy crap! Like, imagine having, but like, seriously, like this, and you have this incredibly passionate moment.
Mm-hmm.
Your whole damn life revolves around vampires. You're finally like, I'm obviously in the mind of Buffy here. You're finally like, oh my God, this guy. I'm kissing him. He's kissing me. This is wonderful. I'm escaping. For just one small moment, I am escaping from the constant tormenting of approaching Armageddon.
Uh-huh.
And then. He morphs into a terrifying vampire.
Uh-huh.
Makeup of which we have read in our Watcher's Guide took at least 90 minutes to put on his face.
Yeah.
And then he runs.
Oh, God, he just dives out of that window.
He dives. And, like, that's, I mean, obviously we've all seen the episode now, so we understand what's going on here. But as you're first watching this, it's like, well, this is an interesting development. He's a vampire who's like, not interested in hurting her. He's trying to get away from her.
This is the first vampire we've seen do that.
Yes. So Angel's a vampire. And that's actually what we hear in the next scene from the mouth of Xander.
Right. And he's like, he's a vampire, you're a slayer, you do the math.
Yeah.
And, God, Willow has so many great, like, very dry moments in this episode.
Yeah, she really does.
And some of them happen here. And then there's that Xander says, you're in love with a vampire? Are you out of your mind? And Cordelia's like, what? Out of nowhere?
Out of heaven.
She is not even listening to Xander. She is distressed because another girl has a dress that is identical to hers.
Yes.
And she says...
She says, this is what happens with free trade. Right?
Yeah, this is
God, Cordelia.
Free trade agreements.
God, Cordelia.
Look at her go.
Look at your layers. Just look at them.
So many layers.
God, she's so upset about the knockoff dress. And unlike, you know, Buffy in this episode, she's got history on lock here. She knows her government policy.
Oh, yeah.
She understands why knockoff dresses can happen. Oh, it's great. And I think actually, well, first, where we are talking about Cordelia, this is really Cordelia's big moment. And I want to talk about an article that actually we shared on Twitter a bit ago. It was the New York Times. It was a New York Times cover story called Buffy is Sweet, 16 and Slaying Vampires. When was this episode? What did you say? April what?
Ooh, it's April 14th.
So this article was April 27th, 1997.
Nice. So it's a couple weeks later.
Yeah, just a couple weeks later. And it's a really brilliant article. It's less a review and more. I mean, I guess it's kind of a review, but it's more just an article about the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of amazing quotes in here, but one of them is Joss Whedon talking about Buffy and Buffy's depth of character, and then Cordelia, and how she's sort of like, you know, sneers at things and rolls her eyes a bunch and blah, blah, blah. And he says, Buffy could have become just like Cordelia if she hadn't been the Slayer. She's an outsider and she gravitates toward outsiders in her new school, which I just thought was such a cool, I don't know, like a dichotomy that exists in the show, but it was just like put very well in this. Surprisingly, Joss Whedon put it well about his own characters. But that, you know, Cordelia has that Buffy has this depth to her because she's an outsider. But we'll see Cordy and more depth, I think, as the series goes forward.
Yeah.
But for now, she's just talking about knockoff dresses.
Who is that article by? In case anybody wants to look it up, because there were some great little zingers in there.
I mean, I think all I did was Googled Buffy the Vampire Slayer New York Times, and it was one of the first links to come up. But it's by Justine Elias, Elias. Buffy is sweet 16 and slaying vampires.
Nice.
But yeah, so Cordelia, I don't know if you know this, but we love you.
We do.
Cordelia, I love you, Cordelia. You're perfect, Cordelia.
So then we see Angel's place for the first time.
Yeah, where is it? Is it like,
it's around.
In my mind, it's in the Bronze. Like, in my mind, it's his apartment is in underneath the Bronze or, like, next to the Bronze.
I think he's very close to the Bronze.
Okay. I mean, the Bronze from the outside, too, looks like kind of, like, stacked warehouse. Like, it just seems like there's, like, a lot of warehouse activity over there.
Yeah.
So.
He's in the warehouse district. So it looks like Angel has acquired or just dug out of storage another leather jacket that he can wear since Buffy has his duster, right?
Right.
He's got this hip-length leather jacket.
Yeah.
And there he is.
Well, we know. I mean, we also know some of the incredible facts we've gathered about this episode.
Oh, yeah.
That jacket. People.
The duster, the long one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People are losing their minds about his jacket. It cost $1,000.
It's in like every Wikipedia article, IMDb fun facts.
Everyone is like, just so you know.
You can't even believe it.
It cost
leather jacket.
$1,000. Which I don't know. We didn't do the math on what $1,000 in 1997 would be in 2016. But I just feel like nobody really cares if a costume piece costs $1,000 or $2,000. Like, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. But I don't know.
Different times, different priorities.
So we're in Angel's place. Go ahead.
And Darla shows up. She's there in a Catholic school uniform.
In this
Preach. Yeah, I am okay. Into. I mean.
Yes, Jenny. Jenny, you like schoolgirl outfits? Is that what you'd like to tell the universe right now?
I just like feel her vibe.
Do you want to tell them why you're into school? I mean, one of the many reasons that you like a schoolgirl
outfit.
There's
so much to like about them. But I used to wear a school uniform when I first started playing shows. That was like my fun thing.
Oh, this is that's a great thing for you to share on our Twitter.
Oh my God, because I have a picture of me at the A Camp Midwest Gothic dance.
Oh, I meant
as
an old picture.
A vampirous. Yeah. Oh, I'll post an old picture of like back in the day, Jenny schoolgirl uniform, and I'll post a picture from just last month when I was a vampire Catholic schoolgirl for the Midwest Gothic dance.
Yes.
Okay, great. Lots of social media.
So many, yeah. And so in case you're wondering where you can see pictures of me going to the prom around the time this aired, Jenny and her schoolgirl regalia, you can follow us at BufferingCast on Twitter or over on Facebook at facebook.com/BufferingCast.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so Have we learned yet that light, I mean, obviously, like, in most vampire mythology, or if not all.
Yes, we did see it in one of the pilot episodes when they go looking for Jesse.
Right, there's, like, a sewer cover.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, so we have that in the mythology already. But here's a question.
Yeah.
Why does Angel have blinds that open in his apartment?
Yeah, solid call.
I mean, put something a little more permanent and less movable up there just in case.
I mean, he probably just didn't change it. He probably just moved in. And also, wait, I'm sorry. Did you just ask why does Angel have blinds? I think we established very clearly at the beginning of the episode that Angel's prime lighting is through blinds. So that's why Angel has blinds.
My mistake.
For when it's dawn or dusk and he can get just the light smattering striped light on his face.
Here's a question. What is the thing that Darla says when she, like, opens up his fridge and, like, is mocking basically his blood bags?
Yeah.
You're not exactly living off of quiche. Is that a saying? Is quiche like a bougie food that I'm, like, somehow unaware of this fact?
I mean, quiche is I think it's, like, talked about like a bougie food, which is hilarious because it's certainly not.
That's
the amount
so
of
strange.
Quiches that my mother made us with, like, store the, like, crusts that you know,
right,
you know,
right,
those
right.
round crusts that they used to sell. Do they sell those?
They must.
Yeah, a quiche was actually a very affordable meal in our household, but it is, you know, like, tiny quiches
are a weird thing.
Fancy, but it was a very weird Darla
moment. I'm curious to know who specifically came up with that line.
Right. And so, Darla in this moment is sort of like, good luck with Buffy.
Right. Tell her about the curse.
Yeah, tell her
the
about
curse.
It. See what she does. Yeah, our ears all perk up.
Right.
What curse?
Right. But we're not going to find out yet because we cut to the library and, oh my God, they're talking about Giles has been doing research on Angel, and Xander is scandalized when he finds out that Buffy knows that Angel has a tattoo on his shoulder, and amazing Willow.
Hold on, because I just want to give a moment to Xander here that you briefly mentioned, but, like, when, because he's like, I'm not going to say anything when she said, and then she's like, oh yeah, I saw this tattoo, and Xander says something like, well, now I'm saying something.
Yeah.
And he does this, like, if you have a second to go back and watch Xander's sassy head move, he's like, well, that's just it. Like, it's really, this was a moment that I wrote down to give a little appreciation to Xander trying to keep it together, but just getting so sassy. He just can't stand it.
Yeah. Okay. And, oh God.
Now go to your Willow. We had to pause so Jenny could write down the whole
Oh my God. That must have been so embarrassing when you thought he'd read your diary, but then it turned out he hadn't, but then he felt the same way. Oh, God. It's so good.
It really is a great moment.
This might be the best moment of Willow in the series up to this point, but then it is possibly trumped or at least equaled just a few short scenes from now, but we'll talk about that.
When? What are you talking about?
When they're in the bronze and Xander's like, we have to distract them. And she's like, oh, Buffy, it wasn't Angel who bit your mom. It was Darla.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Many great moments for Willow in this song.
I wrote that down and I forgot. okay, so, right. So this is, the next thing that I have is back down with the master.
Right. We're learning about the history.
Yes.
Angel's personal history through Giles and Co's research, but also through
the master
and Darla talking about it.
And their history. And, like, and we're learning that like, Angel, or as they refer to him, do they say Angelus? We learn that he's not just any vampire. I mean, he's named for his angelic face.
Nice.
Which, hold on, because there's a, not to keep quoting this amazing 1997 article, but,
oh God, it's so good.
But she writes, in that same paragraph where she's talking, where she quotes him talking about Cordelia and Buffy could have become just like Cordelia, at the end of that paragraph, she says, another subplot involves Buffy's fascination with a mysterious young man named Angel, who seems to have been expelled from the vampire clan for being too gorgeous. So we learn that Angel Wright has been, you know, named for his angelic face, but we really gather from this that he is a very dangerous very like evil, or at least has been, you know, this like historical vampire within like the vampire's history.
Right. They know he's a known dude.
He's a very known dude. He's
got a rep.
Yes, exactly. But what I noted about this scene, with the master, in addition to like obviously finding out these very important facts about Angel, is they have this moment where the master is talking about like how much he you know misses Angel, and Darla mm-hmm. has this plan that she's going to get you know Buffy to try to kill Angel, thereby Angel will kill Buffy.
Yes.
And the master is like so. This is the only time, maybe not, but I think it'll be the only time that I talk about the master in like an endearing way, because we all know how I feel about this man.
His mouth.
But yeah, his mouth is less horrible in this episode. I think they heard me.
Yes.
but he's so proud of Darla, like for working with them as a team, and he turns to the Anointed and says, like, you know, this is how a family is supposed to function. And I just thought it was really like, it was just like this very nice moment, because they don't have many moments where they display feelings for each other, or at least right. they haven't had many up till this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of nice to see like, oh, there's like this appreciation happening, because it's kind of all been like the master just like, you don't do what he says, he kills you, and that's the end of it. Whereas in this episode, he's really wanting to have Darla by his side and to have Angel back
yeah.
in their ranks. And there's like a lot of emotion there.
Yes.
So that's what I had to say about that. But yeah, and then we're moving right along to where Darla is now framing Angel.
Right. Darla shows up and bites Joyce yes. after
Joyce just so comfortably invites her in and says, I'm like, Joyce is like, what do you want? What do you want to eat? Something big or something small? And every answer that Darla gives is like, big. Like I'm like, Joyce, do you not?
Joyce, read the room.
Right?
But I really do like, I continue to love Darla's delivery throughout this episode. She's like chewing on every line. It's so great.
Yeah, chewing on every line and then chewing on Joyce.
I don't know, like, how did you feel about Angel's sort of, like, facial expressions once he was, like, holding Joyce and, like, smelling the blood and stuff?
I thought that I was really into this. Angel, I think, has good moments in this episode where you see him trying to fight this beast.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And he does it, and what's incredible is he does it with his normal person face, but he does it through the prosthetics too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is pretty remarkable. I mean, yeah. Jenny can't even say four words with her vampire teeth, and let alone convey emotion. But yeah, this is really, I mean, obviously we know that he's struggling against this, but this scene he when we watched this for the first time, my first viewing, I was out loud saying, no, oh no, stop, please no, this is horrible, I hate this show.
Yeah. You were so upset.
I was so upset, because then of course Darla runs away, Angel has turned into his vamp face, and Buffy walks in.
Shout out to Darla for this incredible timing.
Timing is really... Well, what's funny is that, like, I feel like there's kind of a side eye to the timing, because she's in the library when Buffy's like, well, in about a half an hour, we'll wrap up.
Right.
And Darla's like, sets her, like, stopwatch and runs.
Oh, my God.
Buffy's just very punctual with what she says. But,
Oh, my God. And then we get that great cutback to... just Angel being thrown through the plate glass
right.
window. Spoiler, that is not the last time we're going to see that plate glass window go up in shards.
But hey, like, this is like a big thing here, because Buffy has just thrown him out the window. Like, Buffy didn't go
out. She didn't kill him.
No, she didn't even try to kill him. She just threw him through the window. And like,
and said, you're not welcome here.
You're not welcome here. He didn't try to kill Joyce, but in her mind... he has just tried to kill her mother. So
yeah.
Feelings are running deeper than I think, you know, Buffy's even like able to admit to herself, because it's not just, it was one thing when she's justifying it because he hasn't hurt her, he hasn't tried to hurt her, how can she, whatever.
Yeah.
In this moment, like, this would be the moment when she goes after him, and she doesn't. She does wind up, you know, saying she's going to go after him later, but her instinct is not to kill him.
Right.
So that's a big deal.
So we go to the library. We always go to the library. We go to the hospital.
Yes.
Where Joyce is in recovery. And I just want to point out that when Darla comes over, Joyce is wearing lipstick. And it's like sort of like, it's like a medium. It's like a, you know, it's not like a pale. It's like a 90s shade of lipstick. Mm-hmm. It is, hello, I am present.
Right.
And then in the hospital where she's laying, she's completely lipstickless.
Oh.
So what I want to know,
do they take your lipstick off when you
is there
go to
some
the
medical reason that that would be the case?
Probably it was just an inconsistency.
Okay, I'll accept that. Well, we let's see. We've got this really interesting thing that I don't think we've seen before on the show, where Buffy basically makes her declaration. She's like, "I'm gonna end this, Rambo," and we get scenes of her stringing a crossbow and doing target practice.
Oh, yeah, with that,
with a
like,
weird poster.
Ad.
And intercut with Darla taunting Angel and trying to, like, egg him on. And basically we're, like, feeling, we're having Angel's struggle sort of, like, articulated for us by Darla, by, like, this other party, which I thought was really interesting, and like the sort of like going back and forth between the dramatic crossbow prep.
Right, right.
And Darla basically being like, this is what you are, like, be what you are.
Right, right. But as we learn, he can't be what he is.
No.
Because of this curse that we learn about, right? That he tells...
Yes.
I mean, that's how we learn about it, right? He's telling Buffy.
Yes.
That he was a horrible vampire. He devoured millions of people with abandon. And then he fed on this young girl, he says, about Buffy's age. And she happened to be a very respected member of the Romanis. Is that?
I believe that's what.
How you pronounce that? I wrote it down and now I forget how they said it. And so the leader of the Romanis puts a curse on him.
Yeah.
And what a curse indeed, that he will stay as a vampire, but he will have a soul. And so we learn in this moment that vampires don't have souls, right? I mean,
right. So they have no conscience, basically,
right,
about what they're doing.
About what they're doing, which makes a lot of sense given what we've already seen of vampires. But Angel has a soul.
And he really like nails it in when he says, you have no idea what it's like to have done the things that I've done and to care.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
That's a chilly line.
It is. I just watched you get the chills saying it. And then we have this moment between Angel and Buffy, right, where he says, I wanted to kill you tonight. She has put her crossbow down on the ground. She walks directly up to him. She, like, tilts her head to the side and says, go ahead. And this is, like, I feel like this is a huge underlying piece of their relationship of, like, what happens here is she says, I'm going to trust you. Or, like, test you, I guess, is more the thing. But there is an element of trust here because she's put her weapon down and she knows at this point how strong he is.
Yeah.
And she is trusting him. She's curious in a way where she's saying, I think I know more about you than, like, I should even know at this point. But I feel...
Maybe more than you know about you.
Right. Maybe more than you know about you. And then to transition us from that very meaningful moment, the next thing that happens, also wrote the quote for, because then Darla busts in.
Oh my
and
God.
She says, do you know what the saddest thing in the world is? And we get this great Buffy quip, bad hair on top of that outfit.
Yeah.
Da-dun-dun. Always. Even in a moment when she's falling in love and about to die, perhaps.
We get
this great quip. And then we learn that Darla sired Angel.
Oh my God.
And then we learn that Darla and Angel have a history together.
Oh my God.
And then we learn that Darla has two guns.
We do. And this should be the head scratcher moment of the episode where it stops working. But for some reason.
Yeah, we go with it, right?
Yeah, just, I mean, maybe it's just because she's like so, she's so committed to like everything in this whole episode that for some reason it feels right.
Right. And you, of course, there would never be, those guns would never hold that many rounds in them.
Right.
To
Hello.
Be shooting. This is a silly thing, but it does give us the other move that I was talking about. There were two great fight moves. And this is a great fucking fight move where Buffy grabs Darla by the ankles. She's on the pool table. Buffy grabs her by the ankles, pulls her feet out from underneath her, and then pushes the pool table. And as the pool table is sliding backwards, Darla is just firing both guns.
So great.
So yeah, and then this is also the moment we have with Willow, which you already talked about, where we need a distraction. And Willow decides, I know what to do. I'm just going to shout at the top of my lungs. Yeah, and then...
Oh, my God.
And then we get to, I think, another, maybe one of our final pivotal moments in this episode, which is that Angel kills Darla.
I just got chills again. Whew.
Which is huge. Like, this isn't just him killing a vampire. This is him killing the vampire who made him
and shared his life for 100 years or whatever.
Yeah. They've lived many lifetimes together. And I mean, we've already heard Buffy sort of admit that she's falling in love with Angel, but it is blatantly clear that his feelings, I mean, they run deep enough for him to kill this person who has made him, despite maybe her being evil or whatever. They have a connection here. So
yeah,
this is a huge moment. And then we see the master having his temper tantrum.
Yes.
It was a very enjoyable moment.
Yes.
And he's like, slamming everything.
Oh my God.
But whatever. Can we just skip the master has a temper tantrum? And then we go to the bronze.
Oh my God.
Jenny, what happens at the bronze?
Well, first of all, it's the post-fumigation party.
Yeah, where apparently the cockroaches are bigger.
Yeah,
they don't understand.
They've just bulked up.
Right.
And Buffy's like, gosh, I just feel like Angel is still watching me for some reason.
And Willow's like,
he's actually watching you right now. So Buffy goes to talk to him, and they have this like very beautiful, close moment where they're like, this can't happen.
Yeah, what Angel is like, this can't ever be anything.
Right, right, right. But then they kiss. And it's like, whatever. I think it's like supposed to be, they're trying to make it a goodbye kiss, but it doesn't really feel like a goodbye kiss.
It sure
doesn't.
It sure doesn't.
And she's like, what's up? And he's like, that was painful. And then she walks away, and you see that the cross necklace that he gave her,
mm-hmm.
which she was wearing, just like burned a little cross into his perfect hairless chest.
And if you're me, you, after you see this scene, you turn to your right and you see your wife clutching her chest. Like, her right hand was literally to her heart. And I was like, Jenny, do you see what you're doing right now?
I like what I like.
You really do. And I want to say here, not to get too personal, and I know we've been talking for quite a bit. This is a big episode, so we had a lot to say, but I wrote down, this can't ever be anything, in quotes, and I quoted it to Angel/Jenny.
Gotta go.
Because it occurred to me that our relationship, minus the vampire elements, had a similar start. The amount of times that you said to me, this won't ever be anything, this can't ever be anything, this is not going to be something.
Harumph
is right. And then just like Buffy and Angel.
Oh my God, do you think they're going to get married in 7 years?
Maybe.
Yay.
And then they'll do a podcast about our life.
Oh my God.
Anyhow,
that would be ideal.
Wow. Thanks for sticking with us.
You did it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know this season, but I want to say that this is going to be one of the bigger episodes that like we'll have. I mean, we just had so much to say. We learned so much. And you know how we feel about Angel. So,
seriously, what an episode.
What an episode. All right.
All right. I think that about does it for us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Jenny Owen Youngs, and when I'm not watching Buffy with my wife, I'm usually writing songs and recording them. You can learn more about me and hear some of the songs that I've written that are not about Buffy over at jennyowenyoungs.com/buffering.
Aren't they all about Buffy in some way?
Way deep down. You can also give me a shout on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs.
I'm Kristen, and you can find me on Twitter. I am always getting deeper and deeper into the land of Buffy these days, so I usually say my personal chatter and feminist rants, but really I think I've just been posting GIFs of Cordelia over and over again, and you can find me there at Kristen Noeline, KristinNoeline. When I'm not podcasting, I work to bring advice, resources, and laughter to LGBTQ young people and their families over at everyoneisgay.com and mykidisgay.com.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter at BufferingCast, and we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/BufferingCast. You can also email us at BufferingTheVampireSlayer@gmail.com.
And if you like what we're doing here, there are a couple of awesome ways that you can support us. One is by going over to iTunes and leaving us a review, letting other people know that you like it so that they can like it, and then we'll all like it. And it'll be a great blast. Or two, you can go over to BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com, and you can click on the donate button. And several of you did that last week. We were so excited to see some donations start to come through. So you can
thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for those of you who donated. It's really awesome. It helps us. Actually, just this week, Jenny had to purchase a new microphone.
So, I did.
Yeah. So we offset some of that cost by your generosity.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening.
No, you have to say, till next time.
You're right.
Say it.
Till next time. That was an extra long one.
Yeah.
I know what I should do, forget about you and walk away. But I know that what I should do and what I want to are not the same. Keep breathing in. You make the rest of the world go dim. History says you're a monster, but it don't know you like I know you. You're fighting it so hard. Fighting it so hard, but it's so hard. You're scared of what you might do, that you might find you can't change your face, but I see what you made of and what you gave up to keep me safe. Fighting it. it so hard. I don't mean to want you only. Gravity is pulling on me. I'm fighting it so hard.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.